Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
at GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Every week on Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology. And today, we're going to talk about the universe, this great universe of ours. With us today, once again, is Professor Chris Empey. He's Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and one of my favorites is Beyond, Our Future in Space. And if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We now have over 5 million fans on Facebook. And I've written 5 New York Times bestsellers. The latest New York Times bestseller is called The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. And it's about what I do for a living. I work in something called string theory, which we're not going to talk about today. But string theory is a candidate, a rather controversial candidate, for a theory of everything. But again, with us today is Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona. And today we're going to talk about the universe. But before we begin, Chris, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, when you were a kid, what steered you in the direction of becoming an astronomer?
Well, I think for a lot of astronomers, physics was sort of my gateway drug. I grew up in Britain, which doesn't have a lot of starry skies, so I didn't really have the pleasure of astronomy growing up. But I'd studied physics, and sometimes astronomy is just the application of physics outward to the universe to try and figure out how things work. So that's how I get into it.
Okay. Well, let's just jump right into some of the big stories. The big story, of course, is the Webb Space Telescope. It's in position. It's a million miles from the planet Earth in what is called the Lagrange point. And what do we expect to find? The pictures are just beginning to come in now, slowly. What do we expect to find with the Webb Space Telescope?
Well, for people who like the news cycle, the next few months are going to be like watching paint dry, because it's basically slowly focusing and calibrating all its instruments and running all the checks it needs to do. So we're not going to see real science images until probably the end of May or the beginning of June. It's taken a selfie, which we saw a few weeks ago, but the real data isn't going to start flowing for a couple of months. But it's already done this incredible thing of deploying itself, and many of the failure modes that it had didn't happen, so everyone's breathing a sigh of relief.
And I understand that if you compare the Hubble to the Webb, that the Webb Space Telescope is 7 times bigger. So explain to us a little bit about the difference between the Webb and the Hubble Space Telescope.
Sure. Well, the Hubble Space Telescope was constrained to be the largest mirror and telescope you could fit in the shuttle, because it was going to be launched and then serviced by the shuttle. And that really is 2.4 meters. That's not that big a mirror. It's not even in the top 70 or 80 if you put it in a list of telescopes, the Hubble. So to get a bigger telescope, it had to be launched by a big rocket and be this ambitious technology that unfolded in space, and that's what made it both difficult and risky.
And as I recall, when the Hubble Space Telescope first went into orbit, it was, I think, nearsighted, right? The mirrors were not exactly polished correctly. That was rather an embarrassment. So there had to be another space mission just to fix the optics of the Hubble Space Telescope, right?
That's right. And a few years later, it was built perfectly wrong. It was a misplaced calibration element, so they were able to correct it back to its original specification. And then 4 more times, the shuttle serviced it and replaced solar panels and instruments, and that's why even in its fourth decade, this Hubble is still doing pretty good work. But the new kid on the block is James Webb, and it's bigger, and it's infrared, and it's going to look for first light in the universe, so everyone's excited about that.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. The Hubble was good for the ultraviolet and optical frequencies. The Webb, as you said, is good for the infrared frequencies. But what can you get with infrared that you couldn't get so much with the Hubble?
Well, for looking at the most distant galaxies and sort of first light in the universe, first stars and galaxies, the Hubble is running out of steam, both because of its smaller size and because it works with visible light. So the most distant light in the universe is redshifted or shifted to longer wavelengths by the expansion of the universe. And for those very early galaxies, by the time that light reaches us, it's been redshifted to a wavelength that Hubble really can't detect. But James Webb was built to detect, so that's why it can do that project. And also for some of the exoplanet work, where James Webb is going to be sort of sniffing the atmospheres of exoplanets, many of the spectral transitions that it's looking for are in the infrared region of the spectrum.
And I understand there's something called the Dark Ages, that when the universe was born, things were not that luminous after the instant of creation. It took time. It took another billion years or so before the first stars began to light up. So can't the Webb penetrate into this so-called dark age?
That's really what it was designed to do. Not the only thing, but certainly one of its main goals. Yes, it should be able to get all the way back to that period of time. So the universe was, of course, a hot fireball in the Big Bang and was glowing brightly, but then that faded and the universe became dark, and then it took a while for gravity to form the first structures. And James Webb is also going to try and tell us whether stars form before galaxies and where black holes fit in that picture. Did they form first? Because we know every galaxy has a black hole in it, so we want to know which came first.
And as you mentioned, the Webb Space Telescope has the ability to pick up exoplanets orbiting other stars in the universe. Does that mean, therefore, that we might be able to get photographs, actual photographs of planets orbiting other stars in the galaxy?
And not with James Webb. It's not going to do that experiment. There's some big ground-based telescopes coming online that will try and do that. James Webb's skill is going to be taking spectra of the atmospheres of Earth-like exoplanets and essentially looking for absorption from items of gas in the atmosphere that indicate biology. If you were looking at the Earth from afar off, you'd see oxygen and ozone, which were created by microbes a long time ago. So it's going to do that kind of experiment for sort of Earth and super Earth out there. It's painful work, though. It's going to take hundreds and hundreds of hours just to do 6 or 8 targets.
Okay, and speaking about exoplanets out there, there's been some recent activity in the Alpha Centauri sector. Proxima Centauri, one of the stars in the triple star system, apparently has a solar system with planets, some of them very Earth-like. So what is the latest concerning what we know about exoplanets? Have we found any that look just like the Earth?
Yes, I mean, they're not exactly Earth clones, but there are probably a couple of hundred that are within 30% of the Earth in size or in mass. Now, we don't know if they have water on them. We don't know if they have life on them, but they're probably the best candidates for being habitable because they're at the right distances from their stars that they could have liquid water. So, yeah, we've got a couple hundred, and the Proxima Centauri system is exciting because, of course, it's the closest system. Breakthrough Starshot are going to try and send little tiny robotic probes to that system in a generation or so. So it's very exciting to have a possibly habitable planet so nearby, 4 light years.
And speaking about that, even though it's the closest star system to the planet Earth, and therefore the first target for some of our probes, isn't it also true that it's a red dwarf? And red dwarfs tend to be unstable with solar flares. Well, let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of the universe with Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona. And if you want to get on Science Fantastic, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letter to the radio station or the website you're listening to, and bingo, maybe you can get on Science Fantastic and 100 radio stations that carry the show. Stay tuned.
Remember what you were doing 4 years ago at this very moment, and how much everything changed a year later. We don't live just anywhere. We live on a crowded island with daily news headlines that make our ancestors spin in their graves. And we all know that tougher days lie ahead. So the real question is, do you have a proper supply of emergency food on hand? If not, now's the time to get some, while things are still relatively calm. The company most Americans choose is My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com to get yourself a one-week supply of emergency food. It comes in a nifty ammo can that's loaded with delicious meals you'll love. No skimping with these meals, as you'll get 2,000 calories per day. You'll like the special $30 savings available this week only on this one-week supply of emergency food, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Youngevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Youngevity for over 17 years, since before it was Youngevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Youngevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Youngevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Youngevity.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, with us online is Professor Chris Empey. He's a distinguished professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and one of my favorites is Beyond Our Future in Space. So we're talking about this great universe of ours. Well, we last left off, we were talking about the fact that the nearest star to the Earth, the target for some of our probes that may one day reach the nearest stars, is Proxima Centauri of the Alpha Centauri system. But the star itself is a red dwarf. And some people think that red dwarfs are rather unstable, with solar flares ripping into outer space, and they may perhaps make life uninhabitable on some of these planets. But red dwarfs are very common throughout the galaxy. So what are your thoughts about whether or not red dwarf stars could be targets for our exploration for life in the universe?
Yes, I think they should be targets. You're right. They do have a lot of activity, and that can be a problem for a planet. They also, the planets tend to be very close because the habitable zone is shrunk close to the star with its weaker radiation, and that means they're tidally locked. So an Earth-like exoplanet will have one the same face facing that red dwarf with its flares. That all sounds bad for life, but if you're talking about a super Earth or slightly larger than Earth-sized planet with a big shrouding atmosphere that could possibly protect life, then I think you could still have biology. And then the numbers game is really in red dwarfs' favors, because there's 100 red dwarfs for every sun-like star, so the habitable real estate overall is really sitting with red dwarfs.
Okay, and so if you were to look at this encyclopedia of 4,000 planets that we've observed going around other stars, is there any one or two or a handful of them that really look promising that might have, for example, oxygen atmospheres or water vapor in the atmosphere? Any planets pique your curiosity and you think to yourself, this could be it?
Well, just as with Proxima Centauri, we get two shots in a binary system. We get two shots at an Earth-like planet. The TRAPPIST-1 system, which was published with great fanfare a few years ago, is very exciting because it's a full planetary system. There's 7 planets, and 3 are in the habitable zone, and they're all Earth-like. They're all within 30 or 40% of the Earth. So there's one system with 3 shots at finding life. So that's definitely worth concentrating on.
And any planets, exoplanets with atmospheres that resemble in the slightest way our atmosphere?
See, that's a great experiment that we need to be doing. And that, it's very challenging because you have to isolate the light from an exoplanet. And Earth will only reflect a billionth of the sun's light. So it's a billion times fainter than the sun, and it sits very close to it in the sky. And we're going to use ground-based telescopes, the next generation of 20- and 30-meter telescopes, to suppress the starlight and be able to smear that feeble reflected planet light into a spectrum and look for life-bearing gases like oxygen and ozone. And that's about a few years away, say 4 or 5 years away, that experiment.
Okay. Now, we talked about the problems of solar flares that red dwarf stars may emit. However, our sun also has solar flares, and one of them recently wiped out 40, count them, 40 out of 49 mini-satellites that were launched by Elon Musk's SpaceX. So isn't this a warning that we have to think seriously about space weather, something that we don't think about? But solar flares can be quite dangerous, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a pretty minor storm. There's a scale of 1 to 5 that they have for solar storms, and this was just a 1, and it took out these 40 satellites. And it was a bit of a self-inflicted error. I mean, this is $80 million cost to SpaceX, and they could have possibly boosted them to a higher orbit, but they didn't. So, yes, it's a warning that these ambitious plans for tens of thousands of satellites in these constellations that are being launched, not just by SpaceX, but other companies, they're going to be vulnerable when there's a really big solar storm.
And speaking about a really big solar storm, what do we know about the so-called Carrington event that happened way back in 1859? It was so powerful that it wiped out telegraph wires back then. If something like that were to happen again, it would really disturb communications, power, refrigeration, banking, everything on the planet Earth, right?
That's right. The Carrington event happened, you know, on the cusp of our modern technology, so we didn't really get to see the damage. There was a lesser event in 1965 that took out a lot of the electrical grid of the North America, basically, in the Northeast. But it was much weaker than the Carrington event. So we haven't had a modern-day Carrington event. And they happen every few hundred years, so you could say we're due. And I don't really know what the consequence would be. Our resilience of our electrical grid is not as good as we'd like, as we often read.
And I was going through the Internet about the Carrington event, and if you take a look at ice cores that trapped the atmosphere hundreds, centuries, thousands of years ago in ice, you realize that around 700 AD, there was another solar flare 10 times more ferocious than the Carrington event. So in other words, sometimes the sun can really have a temper tantrum, right? But of course, way back then, there was no space program, no electronics, no telecommunications. People weren't even aware of the fact that the sun was having a temper tantrum. But it's something to think about, right, as we explore outer space and enter the age of electricity?
Especially because we don't really get a big lead time warning on these kind of events. There is a little warning, and you probably have a good fraction of a day, some hours of warning, but that's not enough to secure all our electrical systems if they're not resilient anyway. So, yeah, this is a concern. It's hard to anticipate or plan for an event that might only happen every century or so, but we sort of need to.
Yes, and there were some physicists who actually went to Congress saying that with just millions of dollars in funding, they could put shielding, redundancies, all sorts of things that would lessen the impact of a gigantic solar flare. But the reaction from Congress was, well, the giggle factor. What? The sun erupting? Give me a break. So at the present time, we are basically sitting ducks in case the sun decides to have another Carrington event.
I know.
Moving on. Yeah.
And then there's cybersecurity as well. I mean, we have bad actors who are also trying to take out our electrical grid, so we have to be paying attention in general to this.
Right. And also, let's say a few things about the planet Mars. Several months ago, we had not one, not two, but three probes that reached the red planet because there's a window of opportunity. One probe from the United Arab Emirates, one probe from China, and one probe from the U.S. of A. So there's a lot of hardware now on the Mars or orbiting Mars. And have we learned anything? Have we gotten any new information given the fact that several nations are now putting Mars in its crosshairs?
Well, I think the rovers that we've had going pretty much continuously for two decades have sealed and tied with a bow the story that Mars was warmer and wetter in the past and had standing bodies of water, shallow seas, and therefore certainly could have been habitable and had microbes. I mean, the other thing that's happened that's good is that we're finally stashing samples for eventual return in probably 7 or 8 years. And when getting Mars rocks back in the lab is so much better than using these remote rovers to do the experiments. They're just much more limited than what you can do in the lab on Earth.
And isn't it true that we actually have Mars rocks on the Earth already in the form of meteorites that may have been blasted out of the Martian surface millions of years ago, drifted in space, and then landed on the South Pole? So isn't it true that in some sense we already have fragments of Mars on the Earth?
Yeah, absolutely. NASA keeps a website, and I think there's well over 100, about 130 Martian meteorites cataloged. Most of them are found on the Antarctic, where they kind of stand out on the pristine ice. They have a huge disadvantage, though, which is we don't know their provenance. We don't know where on Mars they came from. And as it turns out, most of them happen to be igneous rock that's been through heavy altering by volcanism. What we really want are sedimentary rocks where there might be traces of life. So the Mars rocks we bring back will be much better for looking for traces of life than the Martian meteorites that we get for free.
Okay. Also, there was an announcement a few years ago that under the ice caps of Mars, there could be a lake of liquid water. Well, we'll talk about that after the break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135, and maybe your thoughts will be heard on national radio and the Internet. Give us a call. Our special guest today is Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, and the author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes. So stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA News Update. The blistering heat wave baking the southern United States will drag on into next week and beyond. Over 90 million people are living in an area that is experiencing dangerous levels of heat. Forecasters say over 2,000 heat records have been broken across the southern United States from California to Florida. This as Vermont is continuing to recover from the impacts of a catastrophic flooding event from last week. At a press conference, Governor Phil Scott says that it's crucial for residents to report damage.
If your house, basement, or garage flooded, if you have any damage to your home or property as a result of these storms, and that includes driveways, equipment, and vehicles, it's pretty broad. Please report it to 211.
Tim Berg, USA News.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with ExtendoVite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. ExtendoVite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and ExtendoVite is all natural. ExtendoVite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take ExtendoVite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us on the line is Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, Professor Chris Empey, author of Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and Beyond Our Future in Space. Well, a few years ago, there was an announcement that under the ice caps of Mars, there could be a lake of liquid water, which we once thought couldn't be on the Martian surface, but there was underneath the surface a lake. So what are your thoughts about whether or not we have found any indication at all that life may still exist on the planet Mars? Is it just an illusion? After all we've done, have we found any evidence that life maybe once existed on Mars or could exist on the red planet even today?
So this subsurface lake evidence is a little controversial because another subsequent group has questioned whether it is a lake. They're using radar in ways that actually make it a little tricky to distinguish between liquid water and ice or even the amount of it. So that work is sort of a little disputed, but the general idea that there could be liquid water somewhere under the surface of Mars is pretty strong because there are other pieces of evidence that we have subsurface aquifers that occasionally erupt through to the surface and send material down a slope. There were famous images from back in the day from orbiters. So it's very likely that there's water kept liquid by pressure on top or by mild radioactive heating from below. So that's a good bet that there is water under the surface in various locations on Mars, localized water. And if there's that and there's a liquid water energy source and carbon-rich material, you have all the ingredients for life. So it's a fair guess that there it is there.
Okay, but in terms of if you're a betting man and take bets about whether there's life on Mars, I guess you could safely say that so far there is no conclusive evidence for life on Mars. Is that right?
That's right. And the slightly frustrating thing is that all these clever rovers that we were sent or are we planning to send, they can't dig or drill far enough down below to reach where the liquid water is likely to be. It's going to be tens or hundreds of meters down minimum. So we're scratching the surface with our rovers, and that's not going to resolve this issue right away.
And also, the rovers cannot go to the ice caps, right? It's probably pretty dangerous for a rover to go that far. And so who knows? Who knows what's under the ice? Because we've never really been there, right?
That's right. There was a Phoenix lander about 15 years ago, descent from my university, actually, University of Arizona. And it was a stationary lander, but it had liquid brine. It detected liquid on the surface. It was so salted that it could be liquid even at Mars cold temperatures. But that, again, it didn't prove that there was life, and there was no life detection experiment on that lander.
Okay, and some people think that maybe the problem is that our rovers are too slow and clumsy. They cannot go to areas that are volcanic or have lots of rocks or valleys or ice. But some people think that the next generation of rovers could be more like dogs. There's a group in Boston that actually makes robots that look like a dog, can hunt like a dog, move like a dog. Would that would be a game changer in the sense that we no longer have clumsy, slow rovers that can only move on a flat surface if we have replacement rovers which can run like a dog? Any thoughts?
Sure, those kind of rovers would be great. But also we got a proof of concept this past year with the helicopter we flew on Mars. That was very challenging given the thin atmosphere. So if you have gyrocopters or drones.
Okay, well, let's take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue with discussion with Professor Chris Empey, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona. Today we're talking about the universe on Science Fantastic. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track, not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and Save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Attention, your money is now controlled by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000, 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
To you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us on the line is Distinguished Professor of Astronomy, Professor Chris Empey of the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, Beyond Our Future in Space. And when we last left off, we were talking about helicopters. Helicopters on Mars. Is this a game changer? I mean, we have rovers on the ground. We have orbiters in space going around Mars, but nothing in between. So is this a game changer if one day we can have fleets of drones on Mars? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And that would just be a precursor to doing it in other interesting places, too. And I think the most interesting would be Titan, that large moon of Saturn, which also is intriguing for possibility of life and has an atmosphere as thick as the Earth. So it's actually much easier to fly drones there than on Mars.
And on some of these satellites going around Jupiter and Saturn, they have methane on them. Methane is combustible if you can find some oxygen. And some people think that a moon like Titan could be a gas station for astronauts as they refuel on interplanetary missions. What are your thoughts? Is that just science fiction?
No, that's a good point, because carrying the fuel with us or lifting it out of Earth's gravity is ruinously expensive. So really, when we start to roam around the solar system, we need to find fuel as we go. We also know how to take rocks, normal rocks, say, on the moon, and break them down and get the hydrogen and the oxygen out of them, and we can make rocket fuel out of that. So, but having a place to fuel up on the way is going to make solar system exploration that much cheaper.
And, of course, there's no oxygen on Titan, so it's not going to explode, it's not going to blow up. But still, if we bring our oxygen, then, of course, that can be used for combustion or rocket fuel. Well, let me ask you another question about the moons of the Jupiter and Saturn. Europa is interesting because it has an ocean whose volume is larger than the volume of the water and the oceans on the planet Earth. What's the status of a probe to go to Europa? There were plans for it, but it was canceled. But are we serious about one day exploring the possibility of life on a moon of Jupiter?
Yes, I mean, it's had a checkered history, the idea of going back to Europa, because really we went first in the 1970s. But the Europa Clipper mission is on. I mean, it's a primarily European mission. There's some U.S. involvement. And it's going to go, I think, in about 3 years, and it will get there in the early 2030s. Now, it's a little it's not going to land on Europa. It's going to do very close orbiting, and it's possibly going to drop a heavy object and splash off some of the ice and then sniff it to see what's in that icy material. It would take a subsequent mission to do the ambitious thing of landing on the surface, melting through the ice, and releasing a hydrobot or something to look for life in the European Ocean. But just to go back with superior technology from 40 or 50 years ago would tell us a lot about Europa.
Now, some people believe that looking for life in the solar system, that Mars is not the way to go. That if you want to look for liquid water, and that's what, of course, journalists always say, follow the money, follow the money. Astronomers say, follow the water. The water is on Europa and Enceladus, a moon of Saturn. So you think, therefore, that throughout the galaxy, perhaps the most plentiful source of liquid water could be the moons of gas giants. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are some planetary scientists who think Mars gets a little too much of the attention and the money, but it is a lot harder to send missions to the outer solar system. But I think the best guess is that there are roughly a dozen moons of giant planets in the outer solar system, including Uranus and Neptune moons, that have liquid water under their surfaces. And, of course, Pluto is now included in that, a dwarf planet. So you've got a dozen places with liquid water in the outer solar system and one in the inner solar system, the Earth. And if that plays out in other locations, then that's the place you should be looking for life. It's called the cryogenic biosphere. It's the biosphere that's ostensibly in a place that's pretty cold, but there's local sources of heat to keep the water liquid and possibly to fuel the life.
Now, if throughout the galaxy, let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of our universe with Professor Chris Empey of the University of Arizona. Give us a call if you want to get on Science Fantastic. The number is 612-564-8135, and maybe you can get on national radio. Give us a call.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Jose works on a farm. Safety is important. His boss calls 811 to determine where it's okay to dig. This protects Jose from hitting an underground line and from serious injury. Because Jose can't tell exactly where or how deep the lines are, he doesn't dig until 811 tells him it's safe. The most important thing is that Jose works safe and goes home to his family. For more information, visit farmsafe811.org. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Distinguished Professor of Astronomy, Chris Empey, professor at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books, including Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and Beyond Our Future in Space. Well, let's now talk about the possibility of life in our solar system. We talked about the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, which have liquid oceans underneath the ice cover. But some people think that if intelligent life gets off the ground in the ocean, that an aquatic species will only get so far because they'll never enter the electric age because water will short-circuit electricity. Therefore, even if intelligent creatures evolve on these moons underneath the ice cover, that's about it. They won't be able to develop electronics. They won't be able to develop computers. The electric age will be short-circuited by water. But, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about life in the solar system and perhaps life in the galaxy?
I mean, that's a good point. We, of course, on Earth share the planet with species such as orcas and dolphins that most people think are quite intelligent, but they don't have an opposable thumb, so they're not going to develop technology really of other than a rudimentary kind. So as far as the existential question goes, yes, I'm quite confident there's intelligent life out there that just does not happen to have technology or does not happen to have the capabilities we do. So we're only ever going to be able to find subsets of intelligent life that have evolved in a certain way to have the tools that we have, traveling space, radio, optical technology, and so on. So it's much harder to find life in the general case than to find specific instances of life that have capabilities that you know how to look for. And some people worry about that because it means our experiments are sort of incomplete.
Well, there is something called Drake's equation, which try to give an eyeball or rough estimate of how many intelligent civilizations there could be in the galaxy. And the numbers usually come out in the thousands. Of course, it depends on your assumptions. But if that's true, that the probability of intelligent life in the galaxy is rather high, then we have the Fermi paradox. Where are they? So what are your private thoughts? Of course, there's no way to prove it one way or the other. But what are your thoughts about, well, how come they don't land on the White House lawn and announce their existence? What are your thoughts?
All right. Well, you mentioned the short-circuiting of technology. Another sort of ominous factor in the Drake equation is L, the lifetime of the civilization within the technological communicative state. And the possibility is that civilizations are unstable and they self-destruct. And, you know, humans have had computers and technology for about a century, but we also had nuclear weapons and we've had the ability to destroy ourselves. And so if the lifetime on average of a civilization is low, then the number of them through the galaxy is low that we can communicate with. And that means we're pretty lonely out there. And so that's an ominous take on our own predicament, how it plays out in terms of other civilizations.
Well, let me ask you a question that you may not want to answer, but of course you probably get asked this question all the time. The United States Navy has released hours of videotapes taken by pilots, seasoned pilots, of things that fly up to Mach 20 in terms of velocity, things that gyrate with G-forces over 100. And if you analyze these videotapes frame by frame, you realize that these objects have gyrations that exceed the capabilities of our military. And our military has now admitted that, quote, they are not ours, unquote. But what are your thoughts? Of course, no one knows for sure. But what are your thoughts about all these sightings now from the military, where we have videotapes of objects flying up to 20 times the speed of sound and doing things that we think are basically not possible with present-day technology? But what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm a skeptic generally that we've been visited by extraterrestrial intelligence and alien technology. With a lot of these Navy videos, and even the military are circumspect in the way they describe them, that sometimes you have to be careful about connecting the dots. Often with just video or radar or only one mode of detection, you just don't have enough information. You don't know how far away the object is. You don't know its size, and therefore you don't really know how fast it's moving. And so some of the inferences that these are technologies that we couldn't have produced are based on information we really don't have in these sightings. So the Navy has, of course, told the intelligence agency, the National Intelligence Agency, has said, go back and get more data, and then we'll decide whether these things are a threat to national security.
So in other words, in your opinion, the jury is out. We simply don't have enough information.
Right. It's like the Scottish verdict, not proven. They have guilty, not guilty, and not proven.
Okay. Well, but what are your thoughts about the galaxy in general? There are, you know, according to Drake's equation, you start with 100 billion stars in the galaxy, of which we now know that all of them have planets on average. Every single star on average has a planet going around it. Maybe 20% of them, who knows for sure, are Earth-like or super-Earth-like. And you just do the mathematics and you come out with thousands of planets that could have intelligent life on them. Do you think that they all destroyed themselves? Or do you think that maybe some of them just don't bother with us and we're not important enough to make contact with? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a good interpretation. I mean, I do believe they exist, and they might not be nearby. There's a lot of anthropocentric thinking that we have to get beyond when we think of intelligent life, and especially technology, because they just may not be using the same modes of technology that we use. They may be communicating with gravity waves, say, something that we barely learned how to detect and we don't know how to produce at will. So it's just a matter of matching the technology to the ability to detect the civilization. And we're in our infancy with technology.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. So, Chris, thank you once again for being on Science Fantastic.
That was a pleasure.
Okay, once again, our special guest today has been Professor Chris Empty, Distinguished Professor of Astronomy at the University of Arizona, author of a number of great books. Go to his website. Among them, Einstein's Monsters, The Life and Times of Black Holes, and Beyond Our Future in Space. And you've been listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135 if you want to share your thoughts on the internet and also on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.